welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. It's NCAA tournament week, and we have a new thing that we're trying on the pod. We are going to do a redraft. People talk about this occasionally. We're going to redraft the 2018 NBA draft as we know what we know today. And I always say that this is especially valuable for somebody like me. I do not follow college basketball that much. I'm really not aware of what's going on this year, really outside the top few teams. And so I openly admit I don't know much about a lot of these players until I see them play in the NBA. Obviously, I watch them play in Summer League, but now I have. I've seen all these guys, or for the most part, most of these guys play. But we wanted to bring in some guys who are experts in college basketball and watch the draft very closely and get their impression of how they would redraft today. And by the way, this is not in a vacuum. We are redrafting with the information that we had. It's a fun experiment. So there's no specific difficult rules or anything like that. Whatever you want to include in your reason for redrafting a player in a certain spot is fair game. We're not making this any difficult. But joining us from Los Angeles, who's been heavy out on the evaluation trail, is our draft expert at ESPN, Mike Schmitz. Mike, welcome to the podcast. I think this is your first time on with us, but nobody knows the college scene as well as him. And he goes out there and sees it with his own two eyes. So, Mike, welcome. Thanks a lot for taking some time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And in Seattle, the machine who somehow follows the NBA and college basketball with a fine-tooth comb is Kevin Pelton. Pelton, I'm so sorry about UW's loss in the Pac-12 title game and not great seed.
You know what? We're just happy to be in. Eight years later, I've forgotten what it's like to watch a selection show and have the Huskies actually make the bracket.
What a wonderful, wonderful attitude to have. I really appreciate it. A lot of stuff's happening in the NBA. It was a very weird weekend. We saw two coaches get ejected. Doc Rivers and Jim Boylan both got ejected at the same time. We saw the Pelicans completely blow a home lead and then have a Chris Webber timeout situation. That was bizarre. Yesterday we saw the Clippers blow, I think, an 8 or 9 point lead in the last minute, only for Lou Williams to hit a three. LeBron got blocked at the rim in Madison Square Garden in the last 5 seconds yesterday. I know everybody wants to bury LeBron, but like that exact play has happened before. If you don't believe me, go Google Pau Gasol block shot 2015. It happened on opening night in 2015. Pau blocked him on the exact same play. LeBron was trying not to get fouled. He didn't want to shoot free throws then, doesn't want to shoot free throws now. They wanted to throw dirt on him then. Go ahead and throw dirt on him now if you want. But a lot of stuff that we'll talk about later in the week in the NBA. Want to get started on this redraft. So, one more thing. We're not going to worry about the trades. There were three trades made. And this redraft, by the way, is just for the lottery. We're not going to go on for hours here. Just for the lottery. Obviously, any of the players drafted can be taken by these guys. You can take a second-round pick in the lottery if you want. We're not going to. There were three trades made in the lottery last year. Obviously, the Mavericks and Hawks flipped spots 3 and 5. The Suns moved up to the number 10 spot in a deal with the 76ers, and the Clippers also moved up, I think, one position to draft Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at 11. We're going to ignore that. We're going to go with the original draft order. We were going to give you a question to see who got the first pick. But I've decided to just give the honor to our first-time guest here, Mike Schmitz. So, Mike, you are on the clock, drafting as the Phoenix Suns in our 2018 redraft. Who will you select with the number one pick in the redrafted 2018 draft?
I'm drafting Luka Doncic, the Slovenian sensation. I think the front runner for Rookie of the Year. He's obviously been tremendous, and I think, you know, could fit well with their pieces currently in Devin Booker. I mean, he's really exactly kind of what they need in terms of a big playmaker who can make others better. And I think he's, based on what we've seen this year and, you know, the reputation he had coming into the season, I think he's the clear choice there.
I mean, Pelton, it's not like the Suns didn't need a point guard last year. They needed a point guard just as much as they needed anything else.
I mean, the question worth asking here is Ryan McDonough still the Suns GM if he had drafted Luka Doncic? I mean, maybe not, because it did seem like Sarver was, as we know, very involved in that draft process. Is an Arizona alum, you know, the fact that DeAndre Ayton went there right up the road and, you know, was the relatively local guy, played high school ball in Phoenix, all of that made him an attractive selection. But in terms of helping the team win this year and going forward, I don't think there's any question, yeah, that Doncic would have been the guy. I can't remember, Mike, did you have Doncic number one? Did you think Phoenix should have taken him at the time?
It was like, depending on which day you asked me type of situation. You know what I mean? I think ultimately it was like a 1A, 1A situation. I thought that Ayton was made a lot of sense there, you know? Again, it was, I loved Luka. I thought he was going to be rookie of the year. I thought he was the most ready rookie prospect, in the draft. But I went back and forth on it like every day. So I totally understand why Phoenix, drafted Ayton. I mean, he, you know, the points that you said in terms of being a hometown kid, having a little bit of a hole in the middle, I think it made some sense. But, you know, looking back on it now, obviously knowing what we know, Doncic is clearly a star and exactly what Phoenix needed.
All right, so Kevin Pelton, you're on the clock with the number two pick with the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, I think this one is a lot more interesting selection. Marvin Bagley, who the Kings did take at number two, like, I think that was a mistake because of the fact that Doncic was on the board. But, you know, if he's not on the board, you can certainly make a case for Bagley, who has had good moments.
Ayton, well, they did have a point guard. You know, they had a point guard. It wasn't like they were, well, go ahead. I'm not going to get in your way. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, well, that actually is relevant as well. I mean, I think that, De'Aaron Fox and Luka Doncic would have been able to play together just fine, especially the development that Fox has made as a shooter this year. I don't think that would have been a problem per se, but it does make more sense. You look at like their roster as it's constructed, Buddy Hield's development as well. You know, their needs are probably somewhat more in the front court. And I think that is relevant because, you know, I think to me, you can go back and forth between, so Mike and I did this in a vacuum without considering team need a couple weeks ago on ESPN Plus. And, at that point, I was back and forth between Trae Young and Jaren Jackson is the second best prospect in this draft. Young doesn't make any sense for Sacramento, obviously, with De'Aaron Fox. Those two guys, you couldn't play together. Too small. Both need the ball in their hands. So in this case, even though he was the third big man off the board, you know, I think what Jackson did as a rookie, his age, the fact that he's one of the younger prospects, one of the younger players in the league, and an immediate starter in Memphis, I would take Jaren Jackson for the Kings.
Mike, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, I think you can go back and forth between Ayton or Jackson, who's the better prospect. I would have Ayton, you know, slightly above Jackson, kind of how we did in our rankings that Kevin mentioned. But I think Jackson's ability to switch, his ability to protect the rim, he can space the floor, which I think, you know, Sacramento clearly needs with a guy like De'Aaron Fox, who is still developing as a shooter. So I think you could go either way. You know, I think Ayton, I just have Ayton ranked a little bit higher, and I'm, in terms of the top of the draft, kind of a fan of, you know, best player available and then figure it out. But I could see why, you know, Jackson makes a lot of sense there as well.
Yeah, I mean, I like everything about Jaren Jackson. When I did review some film before the draft last year, I looked at a guy, and I would never claim to be any sort of draft expert, but I saw a guy who had a very modern game. His game was, I thought, very NBA ready. I would say, though, I probably would have, you know, one of the things I like about Ayton this year is he has gotten better from month to month. That's what I really want to see from an NBA rookie. I want to see improvement. Doesn't always happen, trust me, and I've seen definite improvement from Ayton, so I'm still excited about him. So number three now, Mike, you have the Hawks. Obviously, they traded out of this spot last year with Doncic on the board. Doncic would not be on the board in our draft, and so I'm not sure that even if we were doing trades that Dallas would be trading up. But who would you take as the Atlanta Hawks with the number three pick?
Yeah, as somebody who had, like I said, Ayton, you know, rated really high, I'm still going to draft him. I know, you know, maybe Trae Young or maybe a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander makes more sense in terms of fit for them. and a front court of Ayton and John Collins, I think defensively maybe leaves much to be desired. But I'm not going to pass on his talent. Like you said, Brian, I think he's gotten better, you know, each and every month this season. And we haven't even seen, you know, a lot of the things that people liked most about him, I think, coming out. Is if you really like DeAndre, you kind of projected him to become a guy who could space the floor a little more. You know, he struggled, obviously, shooting in mid-range, but that hasn't translated yet. So I think he's going to be a guy who can pick and pop to, you know, beyond the three-point line eventually. And just, to me, too much talent to pass up, even though it's not a perfect fit in terms of needs.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin, if the Hawks were actually making this redraft, I'm sure they'd still take Trae Young there, because Travis Schlenk was super, their GM was super high on him, and it was his belief that he could still get his guy, quote-unquote his guy, in Trae Young, which is why he moved back and got the draft pick. But what do you think about Mike taking Ayton here in the Hawks spot at number three?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably go Young partially because of the fact that it's kind of hard to envision what the Hawks would look like if they didn't have Trae Young. Like, everything they've done since then has been so built around, you know, creating a good infrastructure for him. And we've seen, you know, that sort of start to take hold in the second half of the season when he's been just playing phenomenally.
But eight next to John Collins would be pretty interesting too.
Yeah, and there are definitely still questions about Trae. I know that I'm much higher on him than Mike is, which it pretty inevitably means in this version of the redraft that I'm going to take him. You know, defensively, he's been at the bottom of the league in the defensive rating and ESPN's real plus minus. If you get deep into the playoffs, I think there are legitimate questions about whether you can win with Trae Young at that point. Now, you know, if you're the Hawks, or
Is this you taking Trae Young with the Grizzlies at four? Is this what you're doing here? Is that what you're also
saying? If you want me to start that, I could start that. But I mean, I think one of the things that comes up is, like, if you're these teams at the bottom of the lottery, like, you know, whether you can win deep into the playoffs, that's a great problem to have. We'll deal with that problem once we get there. Right now, just want to try to get some talent on the roster. So I think that's maybe part of why I'm higher on Young than some people. But so Memphis is an interesting spot because, you know, Jackson gave that was a nice fit for them because of the fact that he could come in and start at power forward alongside Marc Gasol and Mike Conley and help them, you know, hypothetically compete in the first half of the season, but also is now a building block for them as they look towards a future already without Gasol and presumably pretty soon without Conley. None of the guys available here other than Bagley really fit that same, you know, kind of combination of skills. But so I think that you'd probably want to look for a replacement for either Gasol or Conley. And in this case, again, I think that Trae Young has the most upside. His potential as an offensive player. So I would take him for Memphis.
So Marvin Bagley has fallen out of the top four here. I don't want to say what you're going to do here, Mike, but I think Bagley's had a pretty good year, actually. I think this happens to be a really strong class, and you know, Bagley kind of gets bagged on, I guess, a little bit. But, I think he's done pretty well. But so the number five team would be Dallas. Dallas ended up feeling like a pretty big winner on draft night from 2018. In this draft, they obviously would not be able to get the pick of the litter at number three with Doncic. But who would you take in our redraft with the Mavericks at number five?
Yeah, I'm drafting Marvin Bagley. I think, like you said, Brian, he's probably had a better year than he's gotten credit for. I know there's been some injury issues, and you know, there are still question marks about him defensively for sure, and also in terms of, you know, making guys better. But I think this Mavericks team needs, in this situation, youth. They need excitement. They need someone who can get up and down and give them an element of athleticism. And that's exactly what Bagley does. You know, he's tremendous in transition. I like the ball that, I like the fact that he can, you know, push off a defensive rebound. I think eventually he's going to be a guy who can switch and who's going to make threes. So I'm a big fan of his in terms of just his offensive impact and his fit in today's game.
Yeah, he really was playing very well post All-Star, averaging, I think, 19-9, basically. But he's been a little derailed. He's only played 50 games this year because of injury. Pelton, you have a problem with that at all?
No, I mean, I think it's completely reasonable, and it's actually probably, I think, closer to where we would have had Bagley before the draft than that number two spot. But, mm-hmm. You know, the interesting thing is the ripple effects as you start to look back on, you know, the way the draft actually played out as compared to if we were redrafting it. Because, you know, now if Doncic isn't in Dallas, Dennis Smith Jr. is still the guy there at point guard, and you're building around Dennis Smith, you know, Marvin Bagley, the ability to, you know, maybe run pick and roll and try to force teams to switch and then take advantage of those switches with Bagley, or, you know, Smith's quickness on the perimeter. And that's an interesting roster, but totally different from the reality of the Luka Doncic, Kristaps Porzingis duo that now Dallas is building around for years to come.
Yeah, the Kings, even though they've had a terrific rebound season, they're not going to make the playoffs, but they had a terrific rebound season. The Kings controlled the entire draft last year. I think it was pretty clear that the Suns were going to go with Ayton. And in those, you know, don't you remember this, Mike? In those maybe, maybe on the last 24 or 48 hours, people were starting to see that Bagley was lining up with the Kings. But that, like that, 48, you know, to 72 hours before the draft, I know that a lot of people were asking me, what are the Kings doing? What are the Kings doing? What are the Kings doing? The Kings selecting Bagley number two, which again, I don't think is necessarily a bad pick. I don't know unless you disagree with me. Really set the tone for the way everything happened. It enabled the Mavericks to move up. It enabled them to reset their team, and as Pelton just mentioned, set the table for them for trading for Porzingis, which set the table for the Knicks to clear two max salary spots. The Kings going with Bagley there over Doncic set in line a series of dominoes that could change the face of the NBA, even though you wouldn't have maybe understood it at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would have loved to see Luka on that Kings team, you know, with De'Aaron Fox, with Bogdan Bogdanovic, and just the connections too with, you know, Slovenia and Serbia and ex-Yugoslavian area, with Vlade Divac and Peja Stojakovic. You know, leading into, like, if you would have asked us a month before the draft, you know, it might have made a lot of sense for them. So I think that would have been a fun team, but, you know, clearly I think things worked out for, obviously, for Dallas, and, you know, Bagley's, like we said, I think, had a better year than, you know, some of his biggest naysayers would have expected.
Okay, now I think things are going to get a little bit interesting with the number six pick. This was in the regular draft. Mo Bamba went to the Magic. Mr. Pelton, where do you have the Magic? Who do you have the Magic picking in our 2018 redraft?
Yeah, so if Dallas is the team that I think gets hurt the most by the fact that we're redrafting here and, you know, they're not able to get Luka Doncic after all, I think Orlando is maybe the team that benefits the most from redrafting. Because not only did Bamba have kind of a quiet rookie season until he, you know, suffered a foot injury that has him sidelined, and that's always scary with a young 7-foot player, you also saw Nikola Vucevic establish himself as an all-star and their best player. And now, you know, it seems likely that they will try to re-sign Vucevic this summer. And there's no particular place for Bamba to go in the starting lineup, especially with Jonathan Isaac and Aaron Gordon, you know, established in the front court. The place that Orlando desperately needs help still, and they did trade for Markelle Fultz, and we'll see how that works out for them, but is their point guard in the future. So, you know, to me, I think there is no question that at this point, with those top five picks off the board, that they would go for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who has been great for the Clippers this season, starting from day one as a, you know, 19-year-old rookie point guard. You don't see that very often. He would solidify Orlando at that spot, and I think you'd feel a lot better about the Magic's future if they had Gilgeous-Alexander.
This is a big jump from number 11 to number 6. Mike, how do you feel about that? Would you agree, first off, if you had to take a point guard here, would you have, you know, where was Shai on your point guard list a year ago, and where is he now?
Yeah, he was number one on my point guard list, actually. I was Mr. SGA, and I think this is exactly what Orlando needs, you know, in terms of having a guy who fits their style as well, in terms of length, being able to guard multiple positions, kind of what they're aiming for with that new front office. I was really, really high on Shai, and, you know, he's had his ups and downs, I think, at times as a rookie, but, you know, he's shooting the ball well. He's got a great feel. Again, 6'6 with a 7-foot wingspan. Hard to find, you know, league guards with those physical attributes. So I think it would be a home run for the Magic to get their hands on a guy like Shai. And I was really, really high on him in the pre-draft process.
So last year, over the last years, I've talked to some teams. They said that Mo Bamba, obviously terrific size, that he really impressed teams with his meetings that he had either at the pre-draft camp or his individual workouts, that he really wins the room. And that may have been one of the reasons why he went so high. Did you, Mike, hear that about him, that contributed to why the Magic and other teams were interested in him so high?
Yeah, I think he shot the ball really well also. You know, I think people really saw in workouts that he's a guy who's going to be able to stretch the floor at a high level, something we didn't always see at Texas. You know, he didn't shoot a ton of threes. I think he cleaned up his mechanics a little bit. And then, yeah, you sit down and talk with him. He's extremely intelligent. You know, he'll say all the right things. And then you just look at the 7'9", 7'10" wingspan and a guy who can protect the rim and space the floor. You know, there's a lot to like. And I think with Mo, you know, we knew he was going to be a work in progress. We knew he was going to take some time. So I'm still holding out hope that he's going to become a really productive NBA player.
Okay, so now you are on the clock with the Bulls. They had the number 7 pick. There was some belief that the Bulls may trade out of this pick on draft night, but they didn't. They kept it and went with Wendell Carter, who has also been bothered by injury problems, only played 44 games. But what would you do with the Bulls' number 7 today?
I'm drafting Wendell still. I liked him quite a bit throughout the pre-draft process. You know, prior to that, even seeing him back when he was 15, 16 years old with USA Basketball, you know, always saw a little bit of, you know, potentially maybe an Al Horford type of big man, just in terms of a guy who can switch a little bit, can protect the rim a little bit, can defensive rebound. I think he's going to make threes eventually. You know, he didn't shoot it great this year.
The question with him, 18% as a 3-point shooter.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you really like him, you think he's a guy who's going to stretch the floor. You know, the question with him was kind of, he liked to defer quite a bit. You know, there was foul issues in the past, but I think he gives them a modern big and kind of fills a need also.
Pelton, you feel the same way or no?
Yeah, I'm a little lower on Carter, and we certainly have seen that from him. I mean, particularly in Summer League, he was probably the best of these big men in Vegas at Summer League, and, you know, really showed that kind of Horford-style skill set that Mike was talking about. It hasn't translated to the regular season. You know, part of that may be the fact that, look, he hasn't had a lot of help there. Chicago's another team looking for their long-term solution at point guard. Chris Dunn isn't that kind of playmaker who's going to set up someone like Carter that, you know, is not going to be creating his own shot to a great degree. But it does concern me that in a league where, you know, it's so easy to find good center production that, you know, Carter hasn't necessarily been that productive. Like, you look at the average of all centers in terms of true shooting percentage this season is almost 60%. It's 597. He was in his rookie season at 54%. So that's a long ways to go just to get to an average center.
Andrew, this is when basketball really hits full swing. The NCAA tournament is starting. We've got great seeds, you know, seed battles happening in the East and in the West in the NBA. I think that this is going to be one of the most unpredictable playoffs, at least round by round, that we've had in a long time. And this is when you really see the true contenders starting to outperform the rest. So, Andrew, wherever you're driving your family and friends this basketball season, you want to get there safely so that you can watch the games and enjoy them. You should make sure your car has the right tires to get you there safely. Goodyear knows that performance is everything, whether it's on the road or on the court. So when it comes to choosing tires, Andrew, on your high-performance car, like I know you have, I know that you're going to go to Goodyear.com to help you choose what's best, because Goodyear is more driven. Okay, this will be interesting, Pelton. Number 8 is the Cleveland Cavaliers. They went with Colin Sexton. Sexton had a bit of a rough first couple of months. He has been playing much better recently, although it's hard to necessarily know what's garbage time and what's not this time of year, but he's had a run of, I think, 5 consecutive 20-plus point games. Dan Gilbert tweeted about him over the weekend, or at least last week, mocking people who may have not been supportive of him early in the season. So he's had a complex rookie year, but played a lot and I assume learned a lot. So what would you do in a redraft of Cavs at number 8? And I could tell you the Cavs would certainly be very proud, saying, "We would take Colin Sexton again."
Of course. Of course they would. Yeah, I may have been one of those people that Dan Gilbert was knocking, was mocking because of the fact that, yeah, I have never been a huge Colin Sexton fan. His statistical projections never quite lined up with, you know, what scouts saw in him, particularly the defensive end of the court, where you see that, you know, bulldog attitude that he got a lot of credit for as a prep player, but it hasn't really translated into getting a lot of steals, which, you know, are something that proved very valuable statistically, and particularly when you're projecting guys from college to the pro, and that's held up in the NBA so far. So, you know, I think that what we've seen from him, particularly the return of Kevin Love seems to have helped him, put him in a situation where he's being asked to do a little less offensively, able to play off the ball some and take advantage of the fact that he has been a pretty good three-point shooter for a one-and-done point guard. And, you know, that could benefit him long-term. But I don't think I would go with Colin Sexton here. I instead, I'm going to go off the board because the rest of my top 10 when we did our top 10, Mike and I, a couple weeks ago, is guys that are kind of lower upside, but contributors now. And I don't think that's what Cleveland needs. I think they need to swing for the fences with a team that's kind of starting over in their rebuild. And that's why I would take Michael Porter with the eighth pick for Cleveland. We haven't seen him at all this year. He's been out after having back surgery last summer, but the reports from Denver practice, as Brian has talked about in the past, are very encouraging. And, you know, I thought in terms of pure talent, he was a top 4 or 5 prospect in last year's draft. So if you get a chance to get certainly that kind of talent here, I think you take it.
I would agree. This is probably what I would have done in this spot. Also, the Cavs felt like at this point, first off, they didn't know they were losing LeBron, although they had a pretty good inclination. It was not looking good. They still intended to compete. Had they known they were going to be tanking the entire season, they could have taken a redshirt year with Michael Porter. Mike, what was your evaluation of Porter? I don't think you can disregard the back injury. You have to include it. We also should point out that Porter had a subsequent back injury back surgery following the draft. There was even more surgery that was needed to be done. I don't think that should be ignored either. But what was your evaluation of Porter then and now?
Yeah, it was a strange pre-draft process, I think, for him. Just in terms of the injury stuff and some misdirection in terms of information. But I think there's the injuries a part of it. And then also the intel. His intel during his time at Missouri was very, very poor. And I think that in addition to the injury stuff was certainly a concern in terms of his ability to, relate with other teammates and be a guy who people, you know, want to play with on a regular basis. Again, tremendous talent. I mean, 6'11", you know, shoots the ball at a high level in a variety of ways. I get the swing there. I'm personally still a Colin Sexton guy. I think I'm kind of standing alone on this island a little bit. But some of his moments to me, while the defense has been poor, as Kevin pointed out, and just the fact that he's shooting 40% from three is surprising for me given where he's come from. And I think he's going to continue to get better just given what we know about him as a person.
Yeah, Sexton ranks second to last among point guards in defensive RPM, ranking third to last his teammate Jordan Clarkson. So not great defensive production from the Cavs there, which is one of the reasons why he got to one of the worst records. We've certainly seen one of the reasons why Doncic has been so amazing this year is that typically rookie point guards, they're like rookie quarterbacks. They really struggle. You see rookie centers sometimes have physical issues with the physical pounding, but a lot of times they still put up numbers. Rookie point guards tend to struggle, especially if they get a lot of playing time. So I am always sort of like I never freak out about a playoff series after game one. No matter how it goes, I always think that game one is just sort of a opening salvo. I don't think it defines series. I don't think rookie years define point guards. But again, like I said with Ayton, I like the fact that Colin Sexton has shown improvement month to month throughout his rookie year. I think that's a really good sign, although there are some worrisome things there about his overall upside. But the Cavs believe they have a winner there, and so we'll see. All right, we've gotten interesting here. All right, so number 9 pick, Mike. This was Kevin Knox out of Kentucky to the Knicks. great summer league and kind of had some moments early in the season, but has just sort of been okay this year. What would you do with the Knicks in the redraft number nine?
Yeah, not to make this a Colin Sexton podcast, but I would draft Colin Sexton there. I think their need for a point guard, you know, his personality in terms of a guy who at least offensively plays with a lot of energy. I think he makes a lot of sense there. And I like the fact that, like you said, Brian, he's improved throughout the course of the season. And, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he's a guy who, as a second-year player, has that De'Aaron Fox-like jump. You know, I'm curious to hear Kevin's thoughts on how those two, how their rookie seasons are similar, if at all, in terms of statistical projections and kind of how you saw them, I guess, coming out of their college seasons.
Yeah, they are pretty similar in terms of both of those guys are near the bottom of the league in my wins above replacement player metric. I mean, I think the commonality is, you know, twofold. Number one, not scoring efficiently, either of those two. In Knox's case, I think, you know, probably more correctable in that it's been his three-point shooting that hasn't been there rather than
Sexton's case. I mean, Colin and De'Aaron Fox.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that comparison. So I think the interesting point there was, again, that, you know, the same thing. Fox was similarly inefficient, but it was largely because of his outside shooting. It's the more developable skill as compared to Sexton, where he's already doing that. You don't necessarily expect the same kind of improvement from him. And, you know, whereas in Sexton's case, it's the fact that he's not getting to the basket and his shot selection in terms of mid-range twos has been really poor. And so, you know, I think those are concerns that probably tend to linger longer into a player's career. And then the other thing, I think Fox didn't rate as poorly at the defensive end of the court. So I think I would have seen him as more projectable at the end of his first year, although obviously did not see, you know, the kind of jump that I think has him as the favorite for most improved player.
Number 10 pick was Philly's pick. The Laker, it was from the Lakers, had a nice heartwarming story with Mikal Bridges out of Villanova from Philly. Mom works for the team. It was all nice and happy for about 45 minutes, and then he got traded to Phoenix. Number 10 pick, Pelton, Philly on the clock. Where do you go here?
So I think it says something interesting about the Sixers interim front office weeks after Brian Colangelo was forced to step down after, you know, that whole situation, that the two guys I have on the board for them are the two players they actually drafted, although neither of them weirdly are on the roster anymore. It's Bridges and then Landry Shamet, who they took near the end of the first round and then traded to the Clippers as part of the Tobias Harris deal. At the time, I liked the trade down for them because of the fact that they were getting this valuable unprotected pick from Miami. For Phoenix, moving up six spots, you know, you get two shots essentially at this instead of one. And then talking to people in the league, even though I was a huge Mikal Bridges fan, there were a lot of people who also were quite fond of Zaire Smith and thought that he was possibly even the better of those two prospects. And perhaps we will see that, you know, once he actually gets a chance to play. He's been back on the court in the G League, was active for a game for the Sixers coming back from, you know, he had a foot injury that was exacerbated by an allergic reaction, a very odd and unfortunate situation that caused
crazy.
Him
one of the crazy, year. One of the crazy stories that you'll ever see. He had to have basically emergency surgery because of an allergic reaction, which pretty much ended his season. Crazy.
Yeah. But Bridges has been.
So which
been
is it? Is it
everything.
Shamet or Bridges?
Bridges has been everything that, you know, I thought he would be in Phoenix. He's been this extremely valuable role player on a team that doesn't actually need role players. But you put him in Philly in the context of the stars that they have, and, you know, it would be a little different because, of course, the trade down is part of what allowed them to make the deal for Tobias Harris at the deadline. But he would be a perfect fit for the Sixers, kind of as we figured all along. So I would stick with Mikal Bridges.
Yeah, the Sixers have needed depth, and part of their depth is in Phoenix. And obviously, we don't know how Zaire Smith would be contributing. For all we know, he could be contributing pretty well. But, Mike, what did you think about – what would you have done here in this spot for Philly?
I think it's interesting. If you talk to Philly scouts now, in some of the prospects that they're looking at with the late first-round pick in this draft, are guys kind of like Mikal Bridges, you know, Matisse Thybulle. You know, a Kevin Pelton favorite, I believe. and Cam Johnson as well for North Carolina. You know, just talking to some of their guys, I think these are guys that they would love to have on their team. So I think McHale makes a lot of sense for them. I would consider Kevin Herter as well there, just in terms of having a guy who can really, really shoot the ball in a variety of ways, was a nice feel for the game, and is comfortable playing off of other stars, you know, like a Ben Simmons, like a Joel Embiid.
Well, Charlotte was on the, you know, Charlotte ended up trading this pick to the Clippers. Charlotte had the number 11 pick. It was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander who was picked here. Obviously, Shai's long gone. So at number 11 on the board, and you're drafting again for Charlotte, who was there. What would you have done as with the Charlotte Hornets today in a redraft?
I'm still sticking with Mo Bamba. I think at 11, he's a guy we had, I believe, closely rated to the top five. So obviously his rookie year hadn't gone as planned, but I'm still betting on 7'10 wingspan, ability to protect the rim and space the floor. So a little bit of a swing, but a team that could really use young talent.
They could use any kind of talent. Pelton?
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable call. I mean, Charlotte's center position has been quite unsettled. They've been playing Bismack Biyombo a lot there this season. Kaminsky's been in and out of the rotation. Hernan Gomez has been in and out of the rotation. There's no, you know, besides Cody Zeller, who's always, I think, going to be limited in terms of, you know, expecting him to play 82 games for you. And, you know, there's not anyone else who's part of their long-term future at this point. So I think that would make sense, even though they could also, you know, Miles Bridges has been a perfectly fine pick. I think that, you know, he would make sense for them to go there again, or one of the wing shooters, just to improve their depth.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned possibly Landry Shamet moving up here. Shamet is shooting 47% on three since he went to the Clippers, averaging 12 points a game. The Clippers version of Shamet, now obviously he wasn't getting the playing time in Philly, and that makes sense, but the Clippers version of Shamet is a guy that I would think would be really valuable right here in the lottery in this zone. You know, and it's still not been that many games. It's, I think it's been 15 games, but he's been really good for them, and on a redraft today, I'd be really attracted to that shooting percentage, even though it's narrow. So in the 12th pick, this is the Clippers pick. They flopped spots with the Hornets, but Miles Bridges ended up going into this pick that went to Charlotte. So Pelton, you're on the clock here at number 12 for the Clippers in this case.
Well, you teed it up well, and I think it's between Shamet and Kevin Herter, and Miles Bridges would probably be in the mix as well here, but we've seen Shamet with the Clippers. We know how well he fits there. I think he's kind of got to be the guy, and it was interesting. I was talking with a scout a few weeks ago about, you know, why Shamet went toward the end of the first round and even was considered a bit of a reach there. Like, people figured that he was going to go in the second round, and, you know, he made the point that people were, in himself included, were kind of evaluating him as a point guard and seeing some of his limitations athletically as a point guard. But, you know, the Sixers, I think, had the foresight to see that this was actually someone who should be developing off the ball because of his shooting ability. And he's held up better, I think, defensively against bigger wing players than we expected. So all of that, I think, makes him a lottery pick as we redraft this.
I was one of those guys, you know, who was evaluating him through the prism of point guard and saying, oh, you know, he can't handle versus ball pressure, he can't do this, he can't do that. And taking away the fact that the guy is an incredible shooter who absolutely lives in the gym, and you talk to people in Philly, he attached himself to J.J. Redick and was basically his understudy and followed him around and said, you know, how do I become the next you? And I think, you know, that's really shown both in Philly and now in L.A.
I go to a lot of games in L.A. I have gotten to see him play live now, I want to say, three or four times for the first time this year. I hadn't seen him play in Philly. What strikes me is how fast his release is. I'd never noticed that before. It's not something I would have noticed before. Elite level release. And this represents the guy who's made the biggest jump in our redraft, because he was picked by Philly at number 26 with their own pick, out of Wichita State. I don't know how celebrated. Mike, was he really a celebrated college player? I mean, he was not on my radar, but that doesn't mean anything.
No, it took him some time to catch on there. You know, he had foot injuries in the past. He wasn't a huge recruit out of high school. So, you know, he was known, but he was never seen as a potential lottery pick really at any point of his career.
Well, he is now, which is probably when it's most important. So the 13th pick goes to you now. This was the Clippers used this pick on Jerome Robinson, who out of all the lottery picks has probably had the most – well, I guess Michael Porter is a lottery pick. But he's just not made much of an impact this year. Obviously, Mo Bamba hasn't much either, but he has had injuries. Mike, what would you do here – Clippers number 13th pick in the redraft?
Yeah, it's been a tough go for Jerome. I always thought, even, you know, last year during the draft, that Herter would be a guy who makes a lot of sense. You could maybe say that, you know, with Shamet, they're a little too similar there. So maybe you'd consider a guy like Mitchell Robinson, you know, as your future rim protector, defensive anchor. But yeah, I like Herter so much that I would still select Kevin Herter there. You can never have enough shooting. And I think he's probably a little bit better ball handler, playmaker than he gets credit for. So he's a guy I would pick there, even with Shamet.
Man, if the Clippers had Mitchell Robinson and Montrezl Harrell as their center duo, I might like go out and become a Clippers fan at that point, join Hawk. But yeah, no, I had the similar thought. I might go Miles Bridges here just to give a little more differentiation. But, you know, I don't think you can go wrong with either of those two players at this range in the draft.
You know, I have to say about the Hawks, you know, that Doncic trade is going to follow them for a little bit here, and we'll see what happens with this Dallas pick. That could end up being the sixth. If the chalk held, it would be the sixth pick in the draft today, which would be a hell of a trade, because they like Trae Young. But if you look at the guys that that they have drafted, Travis Schlenk's draft picks, John Collins is showing extraordinary upside. That might be a future all-star. Mm-hmm. Herter, as you mentioned here, Mike, is outperforming his draft position, which was taken 19th. You know, Trae Young has done pretty well. His defense is an issue. Gonna have to be addressed, but he's had a pretty good year and probably will be on a lot of rookie of the year ballots. Maybe not at first, obviously, but at second or third. So, I think, my hat's off to the Hawks. They've still got a lot of work to do. They really need to keep the Dallas pick this year, so that the trade for Doncic would have been basically for a number five and a number six. That would be easier to swallow than they need to hit that pick. But, I think Travis Schlenk has done a pretty good job, and I also like Herter. Maybe, you know, you never wanted to be maybe more than your third or fourth best player, but at this position in the lottery, I mean, that's the kind of player you're hoping to get right there, to be dead honest. Sometimes you get a grand slam with Donovan Mitchell in this zone, but those are few. And, you know, also I think Giannis was taken right about in here. Actually, Giannis was a little higher, but okay. So we have the last lottery pick here. Pelton, Michael Porter went here to Denver. Denver was a team that could gamble on this pick a little bit because they had a whole bunch of young guys on their team. They didn't need a guy at this spot. Nuggets are overall very deep. But what would you do in a redraft with the Nuggets here, knowing that Porter is gone because he's been taken much earlier in the Cavs slot?
Yeah, which kind of underscores why this worked out so well for the Nuggets. And even with the injuries they've had this season, their depth has been such that they haven't really missed a beat at any point. So, you know, the incredible work there by the Nuggets front office, I think, in terms of building a talented young roster. Without Porter as an option, you know, to me, I think the one weakness of this roster is, you know, it's obviously still pretty offensive-minded. You need more athleticism on the wing, guys who can be switch defenders if you're playing that style of defense, that sort of thing. So, you know, I think Zaire Smith might be a consideration here, you know, especially if he is able to come back 100% from everything he dealt with this year. But I would probably go with Josh Okogie of the Timberwolves, who hasn't had a spectacular rookie season, but has started a fair bit, has held his own, shown some potential as a shooter, and has been really about as good as I've seen in a wing defender as a rookie.
Yeah, I had that classic moment where he blocked James Harden's step back. Andrew and I were talking to him literally the next day about it in Charlotte at the All-Star weekend. So that was kind of cool. We got to talk to him about it. Mike, You know, this is kind of a tough spot. You could probably go with four or five, six different names, and it would all be okay. But at the last lottery redraft slot.
Yeah, Mitchell Robinson is still available?
He is, yeah.
He's free and available.
Yeah, that's who I would select. I like the Okogie pick. He's been awesome in terms of his energy, his defensive versatility. There's so much to like about Mitchell Robinson in terms of his rim protection, his vertical spacing. I would be interested to see him and Jokic together. I don't know. It's kind of a yin and yang. But he's the guy I would pick, especially in terms of a team like the Nuggets that, like Kelvin said, has the luxury of waiting and they have a, you know, productive team already. So he's a guy I would swing on.
I'm the president of the Mitchell Robinson fan club, and I didn't take him, so I feel bad about that now. I thought that, you know, with Mason Plumlee and Nikola Jokic, that, you know, Nugget's pretty set there. But yeah, that would definitely be an interesting long-term play with Robinson's ability to kind of defend and particularly block shots on the perimeter in a way that you almost never see from centers.
Right, averaging 2.5 blocks a game in just 19 minutes a game for the Knicks. And this is a big jump and a compliment to the Knicks, because Robinson was picked 36th, and here Mike Schmitz, who knows a lot about a lot, would hey take him in the lottery. By the way, I'm ignorant to this Mike. Where was Mitchell Robinson last year? He wasn't in college, right?
Yeah, I mean, no, you know, there were times when no one knew actually where Mitchell Robinson was. He was on Western Kentucky's campus, then he left, then he tweeted some stuff, then he's back. It's like, is he going to college? What is he doing? And then eventually opted, you know, not to play at Western Kentucky and just to kind of train. And there were question marks about, you know, his approach to the game in some ways. And he had, you know, had a really rough background growing up. But it's been a perfect fit. And I think, you know, while intel is really, really important, you know, sometimes getting a guy with those freakish tools who plays really hard is worth more than that, and he's proven that, and I think New York has been a perfect spot for him just in terms of having the opportunity to show what he can do. So I think if he would have had a more traditional path, he went to, you know, a program that was well respected, and he played, you know, 20-25 minutes a game, he's a guy who would probably have heard his name called in the lottery.
So yeah, well, that's a good point. But again, props to the Knicks. Good move there. So real quick, I want to talk about Zion Williamson for a minute. But before we do that, for you guys, and I'm going to take the first spot here. I'll let you think about it for a second. Out of all the other guys taken in this draft, the guys taken outside the lottery, who is one guy who has, like, really super impressed you this year? A guy that has, you know, overachieved that you really like. The guy that I'm going to take off the back is Rhodey Kurux from the Brooklyn Nets. Has really impressed me. A 6'9" guy. Didn't know much about him. He played in Europe last year, but only, like, Schmitz, what was his story there? I've heard a couple of different stories. He barely got off the bench for Barcelona, and it's been described to me it was because maybe they were unhappy that he wanted to leave. However it was, he was taken midway through the second round by the Nets and has been a first round kind of talent so far, in my opinion.
Yeah, he would probably be my choice as well. It was a really tough situation in Barcelona for him. You know, he was a big time prospect at a really young age. He was well known on the FIBA circuit. He had some different injuries that kind of limited his playing time throughout the year, wasn't really able to develop. And Barcelona, you know, isn't known for playing young players. I mean, we saw it with Mario Hezonja as well. His, you know, obviously not a great player in the NBA now, but his minutes were really sporadic. And there were times when every NBA team was in Spain. I remember being at the Adidas Next Generation tournament, and it was a perfect opportunity for everyone to see Kurux play with their second team in Lev Gold. And they decided, hey, you're not playing. You know, we kind of want to hide you in some way. So it was kind of like Where's Waldo of trying to find Rhodey Kurux and when he was going to play and where he was going to play. And you had to hit his agent, you know, 24 hours before to see which team he was with. So it was a really difficult situation to evaluate him. But I think if you saw him prior to that at the FIBA level, you knew that he was a guy who was 6'10", who could shoot and was an aggressive scorer, and he's been awesome for Brooklyn.
One of the things he told me, I talked to him at All-Star Weekend, he told me that, you know, a lot of times Europeans aren't suited to the American game because it's a change from what they're used to. With him, it was the opposite. He wants a wide-open game where you can't touch the offensive player. He was the inverse. He was the European player who was more suited to the American game, who didn't fit in Europe maybe as well. And also, by the way, roughly about the same age as Kristaps Porzingis, maybe a year younger, both Latvian, to be the cornerstones of Latvia in the future international. Pelton, if there's one guy who's impressed you outside that lottery, that you could pick anybody, who would it be?
So you guys both took my first thought when I was looking at the draft board. That was partially because I needed to go entirely off the draft board. You mentioned Kenrich Williams, who went undrafted in June, but has found his way onto the roster. The Pelicans was the only undrafted rookie to, you know, make a 15-man roster, not with a two-way, out of training camp, and now has been getting starting small forward minutes since the All-Star break and since the Anthony Davis trade request. He needs to improve as a shooter, I think, to, you know, really be that kind of 3-and-D contributor you want on the wing, but super high basketball IQ, makes good decisions, good passer, and really plays hard. So he's quite impressed over the last couple months here.
Yeah, post All-Star break, averaging 30 minutes a game, 7 points, 5 rebounds. You know, shooting the ball okay from range, but yeah, you got to get lucky every now and then. So I kind of know how you feel about Zion, Mike, but I won't take the words out of your mouth. I mean, you know, you've been around a while. You are as studied on this as anybody. You go all over the world looking at young prospects. What's your viewpoint of him?
Yeah, I've never seen a prospect like this. Just in terms of, obviously, the sheer physical ability, I think, is what stands out first, but what I love about Zion is just the motor he plays with. I don't really think we've seen a prospect as highly touted as him, who was really a YouTube superstar, you know, at 16, 17 years old, who comes out and competes the way he does. I was in Charlotte at the ACC tournament, and, you know, he's coming back from injury. I'm thinking, okay, you know, maybe they're going to play him 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes. He'll be on a little bit of a pitch count here. And not in the slightest. I mean, he came out and put on one of the most impressive performances I've ever seen, pitched a perfect game, 13 for 13. So I really love his motor, and I think that he's actually kind of embodies the small ball center that's in some ways the future of the NBA and that we're seeing, you know, more and more of in terms of a guy who can switch every ball screen. He can protect the rim. He rebounds everything. He can push in the open court. He can really create from the perimeter. Yeah, he's as impressive as a prospect as I've ever evaluated.
Statistically, it backs up just the same with the high shooting percentage, the combination of steals and blocks that, you know, often marks players as really good defensive prospects. And, you know, I wrote a piece about this a few weeks ago. It was actually the day of the first North Carolina game, suggesting that, you know, if he had just picked things up a little bit over the rest of the season and played every possible game, that he might be able to pass Anthony Davis for the best projection for any college player in my database, which goes back to the 2003 draft. Although at that point, of course, many of the best prospects were coming in as one and dones. So, you know, statistically, there's really, you know, a lot to like about Zion, and it backs up everything that we see by watching him.
Brian, we're running out of time, but I just wanted to get one question in here before we got out,
I guess.
Schmitz, if Zion was in the 2018 draft, where would he go?
If Zion was in the 2018 draft, where would he go? Zion would go number one for me.
I think that's probably true, yeah.
So this is the redraft, knowing what we know now about Luka. I might still take Luka over him, but that would be the strongest draft in recent NBA memory if both of those guys. It's already
sure.
A really good draft.
So before we sign off, I know nothing about college basketball, and I don't ever do a bracket. But Schmitz, you watch a lot of college basketball. If there's one team that you think makes a surprising run, I want a surprise team from you.
A surprise team. I like Murray State.
Yeah.
I think we go with the Fighting Ja Morants. this guy is built for March. He loves the moment. The team plays really, really up and down. They shoot a ton of threes. You go watch them practice. It's loose. They're close. You know, the head coach is shooting step back jumpers and like they just have a really cool vibe about them. And so they're, I think in a good position to make a run here and go deep.
By the way, they're 27-4. That's a damn good team. Mm-hmm. I don't care what conference they play in. You go 27-4. I know enough about college basketball to know that that's impressive. They are no gift or you know, one man show, I don't think. Pelton, other than the Huskies upsetting the Tar Heels in the second round going to the Sweet 16, what else do you have on your what surprise team are we gifting to our bracket filler outers from your expertise?
So, and I swear this is not overreacting to what happened on Saturday. I'm actually going with the Huskies' biggest rivals, Oregon, who I think, if you're looking for a double-digit seed to make the Sweet 16, they're a 12 seed after only getting in by winning the Pac-12 tournament, but have won 8 in a row, have just been locking down defensively. This is a team that came into the season with really high expectations, lost Bol Bol, who is a potential lottery prospect for this upcoming draft, mid-season to a navicular injury, and it really threw them for a loop, but they have found their footing, they have a lot of talent, and then a really good veteran point guard in Peyton Pritchard, who has spurred this run, and you know, I think is the kind of player you want at the helm in March.
Boy, we got a lot of smart basketball guys on this podcast for a change, Andrew, this week. Thank you for listening to our redraft. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed the NCAA tournament. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Kyrie, back in Bristol. Thanks for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast.